Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this early week edition of the podcast. We are downloaded in over 30 countries across the globe and available on every major media platform. For everyone listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show if you have not already. Nothing you do will help us more immensely. The Red Sox just wrapped up a rain-shortened two-game set against the Miami Marlins, winning both games. They are now 1.5 games, I didn't check, against the Tampa Bay Rays, and still in second place. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can also find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the city of Providence, Rhode Island, Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing very well. No complaints. Actually, you know, better because the Red Sox in the last 8 minutes gained a half a game. We're just one game back, baby.
We are one game back.
It's just one. I'm feeling good.
I thought
feeling great. Three in a row.
Tampa's win today. Yeah, I hauled my own pants to the ground by not checking, but I thought it was a game and a half with the Phillies game today, but
no, it's all good, all right.
Bad
for
news.
Those that are I was gonna say, for those that are looking that want to cause problems with me, feel free to hit me up on Twitter. It's SMITH Smith, no trick, _MLB. Smith_MLB.
Gotcha. And Houston coming up though, so we'll see. Yeah. Also joining us tonight, she is the host of the Did You Hear podcast, which covers a wide array of sports. She is from Fairfield County, Connecticut. Emma Houghton. Emma, how are you?
I'm good, Terry. So happy to be here. Sox are playing well. It's fun to talk about them when they're playing well.
Absolutely. And Jason Kelly had something come up, so he should be back with us next week, we're hoping. So Emma's kind of coming off the bench to help out. So good series to do it. The Red Sox beat the Marlins in both games. One of them was during a monsoon, which was shortened, I think, after six and a half innings, something like that. And then game two was a bit of a grinder, but they won that one 3-1 with Nathan Eovaldi on the mound. So we will get right into studs and duds. Charlie, you're leading off. Who is your stud for the series?
You know, this one, it's going to be a surprise and a shock. I'm not saying Rafi Devers for what feels like the 18th time in a row because he's one of the best players in baseball right now. I'm actually going to go. I'm going to go with Alex Verdugo. And Alex Verdugo changed game one when they were playing in the rain. One pitch, one curveball, one oops, and three runs came across. And that's why we won game one. So Alex Verdugo, while he didn't have a great series, he only went 1-for-7, but that hit made all the difference. It's like Big Poppy in the 2013 playoffs only had two hits against the Tigers, and one of them tied the game. So you know what? I don't care. Call me crazy. Three-run homer that wins a game should be valid here. Verdugo, done.
Emma, thoughts on Alex Verdugo?
He is – the clutch factor is becoming so big. And you're totally right, Charlie, about the one thing. I mean, first of all, about the rain game, I don't think I've ever seen a field in such bad conditions. I couldn't believe they let it go so far. So you could basically call Doogie's homer a walk-off homer. That's what it was to me. The fact that Matt Barnes was warming up in the pen in the sixth inning to try and come in, everybody knew. But I'm really happy with where Verdugo is. It's so nice having him back with fans, too, and at the ballpark. At Fenway, especially, it's so nice seeing him interact with everybody. Yeah, I'm all in on Verdugo right now.
And he hasn't quite been the power hitter I thought he might be based on his 2 months last season. I think he hit five of them, and he's probably right around that right now. But I thought we'd see a little bit more of an uptick there. But the one impressive thing about him that makes him extremely clutch is he never strikes out. Very hardly ever strikes out. And he had a pinch hit situation in a recent series. Had the game. I think he was having that hamstring issue going on. And a lot of people were upset that Cora was bringing him in over someone else that might have been available. That might have actually been the game where Bogarts and JD were also, having the game off. And I was telling them, I'm like, he doesn't strike out. He's perfect for this situation. And he came through with a power shot in game one. And you're right about the field conditions, because there were deep puddles on the outskirts of the infield. And I kept wondering, I'm like, what if somebody rips a grounder? What's it going to do when it starts hitting those puddles? And are we going to get dinged for errors? Like, I've never seen it, but they must have known that Sunday was literally going to be a wash. And if they didn't get through it, maybe only one of the three games, and we don't go to Miami at any point. They don't come back. It's an interleague series. So I think that's why we kind of got forced into it. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't even like watching those games, because I feel like the offense just isn't going to be there. The pitching isn't going to be as good. It's like a major distraction to me sitting in my dry living room on my dry couch watching an absolute downpour happen on TV. It's just not fun to watch.
I was thinking about if somebody had to slide. I genuinely can't imagine what would have happened if somebody slid on that infield. The dirt would have been everywhere.
They might have
sliding to second base.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They missed second base, and now they're in left field. It would have been brutal.
Or what could have happened was they could have let up like a giant wave into the second baseman's face, and, you know, he wouldn't have been able to see. So we didn't get to see some epic bloopers, but, yeah, so – Emma, go ahead. Your stud for the series.
Yeah, so I was between two. One I had to move to honorable mention, but you mentioned it before we started recording. It was hard to pick one stud and to pick any duds, because I do think overall it was a very good series. I'm going to go with the Hunter Renfrow for my stud. And I think it's specific to this series. And I think if we look back, this is going to be the series where people check things off a box and realize that Renfrow was maybe one of the best offseason acquisitions that Bloom made. Game one in the 9 spot, which I don't think Renfrow has been in all season. 2 for 2 with 2 runs. And then in game 2, back up to the 6th spot. 3 for 4 with a run, 1 RBI. Pretty sure that was his 2nd 3-hit game of the season. Everything's clicking for him. And even though the numbers aren't popping off the page, the batting average is right around 250. Continues to go up, though. OPS is right around league average. He's a sneaky good defender. And every single game, we get reminded of that. He's getting that clutch factor like we just talked about with Verdugo. And he's good on the base pass. He's just putting the ball in play, and he's also hitting it harder than he ever has in his career. At the beginning of the season, I think we were looking at Renfrow and kind of expecting the out. Now he's coming up, and if it's a good pitching matchup for him, I'm expecting him to get on base.
So in 2020 and 2021, literally 8.5% of the United States knew about stocks. Now you have 98% of people in the world who are all about stocks and all about buying the dip and buying the hype. And while he's 7 for his last 10, it's cute. I love to see him doing it. And I agree with you, sneaky good defender. I think he's past that because the kid has a rocket. Honestly, I think you need a permit to throw as fast as he does from the outfield, because he could throw people out off a no bounce, which is dumb. I'm a little bit nervous to say it, although I love the fact that he's had, I think it's 7 or 8 multi-hit games this month. He's got a .307 batting average, which is way higher than what he did in April. It's starting to warm up. We all knew what was going to happen when it got warmer. Balls were going to sail a lot farther, and those deep fly balls are now going to be home runs. I don't know if I want to buy the hype, because I didn't have the stones to say I was going to buy the dip. Those are stock references for those keeping notes and track here. I'm happy to see it. The Sox have won 3 in a row, but it's going to take a couple more games for me to start buying into it. No question, had a fantastic series in 2 games. When you go 5 for 6, you did your damn job, and no one can take that away from you. But I need to see a little bit more consistency before I call the month of May an anomaly. So kudos, Hunter Renfrow. Thank you for doing what you did. 3 of those 5 hits were doubles, and you had an RBI and 3 runs scored. Thank you, sir. Keep that up. Don't let April happen in June. Thank you.
Yeah. The other thing is that the bottom third of this lineup has been so bad that when you have a guy go 7 for 10, it's pretty much like the savior. So maybe that was the recency bias coming in there.
It makes him look better, that's for sure. I mean, when you're surrounded by people that aren't hitting. But Terry, what do you think?
Well, I haven't been a Hunter Renfrow guy. I wasn't a big fan of the signing. You know, we'd get so frustrated with Bradley's slumps, and then now we're going to watch Hunter Renfrow slump. But he has been good in spots, and he's been especially good against lefties. So I'm willing to let it ride every time if there's a lefty starter, for sure, or if you need a defensive replacement late in a game if it's a righty. I think ideally that's the best role for him. And he did have a 2 for 3 game in game 1 against Poteet, who's also a righty. And then, but in game 2, he had an even better game, 3 for 4 with Trevor Rogers in there, who's been unbelievable this season. Had a 1.75 ERA coming into the game, and would probably easily be the ace of the Red Sox staff if he was over here. Not that our starters are slouching outside of Rodriguez, actually, but so he did have. He did have 2 good games against 2 pitchers that were kind of rolling pretty well through the month of May. So it's hard to try to put your finger on what Bloom might do at the deadline, but I'm guessing Renfro's probably still going to see time against righties, but we saw Mitch Moreland hit like 340 last season against only lefties, and Renicky was managing and just seemed content to put him in those spots. So I'm hoping that's what happens with Renfro, but still have to be impressed. So,
I mean, the crazy thing is against lefties, he destroys everything. He's hitting 340. Against righties, he's hitting barely 200, like barely over, but he's mashing. He's hit more home runs. Granted, he's had more at bats, but still, I mean, the difference is just astounding. A 130 average difference. That's wild. And the strikeouts too, like, it's insane. He's not as comfortable against righties. It's insane.
The crazy thing to me is that there's always a market for these type of players. He pretty much exactly fit the mold of a Tampa Bay Ray, and then the Rays DFA'd him, which definitely doesn't put a good taste in anybody's mouth. But the Mitch Moreland comp is perfect. He's obviously better in the field than Mitch is, I think, at first, but there's always going to be a market for that type of player. And when you have the necessary positional depth, which I think right now the Red Sox are kind of in the middle, and it's going to be interesting down the next couple months if Bloom decides to get starting pitching is obviously the biggest need, but they do need some bench depth. If that guy's going to be a righty or a lefty, and then you're going to see what type of lineups go out there, because then you got to decide between Marlin, who's a switch, and Bobby and Renfro, and even somebody like Christian Arroyo. But if Hunter can have one more good month, I think I'm buying it. Maybe I'm just more optimistic than you are, Charlie.
Yeah, it takes us a little while to come around, but I don't think Renfro's going anywhere. I think he'll be here for the duration of the season, and hopefully for a long time in the month of October, if we get there. We got to hopefully avoid the wild card by beating Tampa. But we'll see. My stud for the series, and this might be the first time all year he's been picked as a stud, because he was an all-star on the dud side for at least the month of April. But I'm going with Josh Taylor. Just quietly been extremely dominant out of the bullpen. Has a 0.00 ERA for the month of May. I think he's only got something like three walks in that span. And he's coming in all different situations. He's coming in with a clean inning and getting out of it. He's coming in with inherited runners and keeping them from scoring. He could very well be a high leverage guy, just a bona fide high leverage guy, even though he's a lefty. So I love what I'm seeing. There's other guys in the pen that are pitching very well and have had very good months as well. So I guess it's just good to have a lot of solid depth that we currently have. And I put out a tweet earlier, Matt Barnes, 270 for the month of May, been solid all year. Darwin's and Hernandez over seven innings over the course of the entire month, 257 ERA. Adam Ottavino has pitched more innings than anybody, 12 innings pitched, a 2.25 ERA, and he's basically the eighth inning guy, whether Alex Cora wants to put an official label on that or not. So to have Barnes in there, Taylor in there, quietly just shutting other, you know, lineups down, it's been fun to watch, because we were all ready to write him off. He had a couple of bad appearances the final week of April. I think he gave up one run in one, and then two earned runs in the second appearance before finally turning a corner. So I like what I'm seeing. I'd wear a Josh Taylor jersey.
Emma, I'm going to let you go first.
I'm still not sure I would wear a Josh Taylor jersey.
Neither would I. Thank you.
I'm not totally in yet. I think I've had too many scarring experiences so far. But I really like all those bullpen stats you said. And it seems like almost everybody's role has switched. Everybody was talking about Garrett Whitlock. Everybody was talking about Matt Andreese. And now everybody's starting to shift towards Taylor and Ottavino and even Hernandez, who I'm still kind of on the rocks with. The question to me is, what type of reliever is he going to be? What situation is he going to come in? I think somebody like him will do better if he has a specific role to come into, and also if he can get some more depth. Because going in for a one inning hold is nice, but we don't have a ton of options, sixth or seventh. Who's going to go in there and lock it down? If it's Taylor, I'd love that, because I do agree that Ottavino, whether Cora, whether fans like it or not, is going to continue to be that eighth inning guy. I like that he had a good series, or really just the one inning, but I want to know who he is and how he's going to be continually in these high leverage situations. Because I think if he can be the high leverage situation guy, then that makes the Red Sox have a much better bullpen. And that can be what separates the Red Sox from the Blue Jays. I still think the Rays and even the Yankees are above the Red Sox bullpen, but that could be a big factor between the Red Sox or the Blue Jays in the playoffs even.
So my thing about Josh Taylor is, like, he had a good game on paper. He gave up 3 hits in an inning, struck out 2, and 75% of his pitches went for strikes. He cleaned up the 6th and almost blew the door open in the 7th. Adam Ottavino saved this man, because Josh Taylor, before that appearance, had been beyond stellar. Like, Craig Kimbrel stellar. Like, 1 hit in 7 innings allowed stellar. The guy was perfect. So I can get behind it a little bit. I don't know if I buy Hunter Renfro or Josh Taylor yet, because we saw Matt Andreese do okay in the month of April, and then I don't even know what happened in the month of May. It's like he forgot what his role was. It just is beyond bad. So for that reason alone, I need another month. I can't make a decision on 2 months, unless your name is Rafael Devers and I know you're a stud. I can't do it. Adam Ottavino, if he had gotten rocked, Josh Taylor would have gotten rocked. He would have allowed 2 runs in an inning. His ERA would have been closer to 5. And I don't know if we'd still be talking about him in the same light. I think very possibly yes, because Josh Taylor in April had like 3 or 4 bad games. He hasn't had one in May, because he still got out of it. So okay, because he didn't allow a run, but I'm still being cautious about buying into it just yet.
Well, he came into game 2 with with 1 out in the inning. And I was a little surprised that it ended up being Will Venable managing in Cora's absence. I was kind of surprised he came out for the 7th inning, having, you know, recorded 2 outs. I think he's gotten 4 outs 1 or 2 times, but I wasn't really a big fan of that. And I also wasn't a big fan of Adam Ottavino coming out in replacement of Taylor, because he had already labored so bad the night before in the rain, and that a lot. He had 3 walks, but he couldn't grip the baseball, so I'm not going to hold that against him. But it was a stressful outing, so I don't think I don't think that was a very good game managed by Will Venable, in Taylor's defense. But both of them pitched fine. And I'll say this about Ottavino. I forget who the first base runner was, but he immediately took second base, because Ottavino has one of the slowest.
Sierra?
I don't know. But he's got one of the slowest deliveries I've ever seen. So Ottavino needs to be coming in with a clean inning, or maybe with 2 outs in the inning for him to only get 1 out. I don't like how either of them were utilized there, but nonetheless. And I'll say this about Taylor as well. He typically, if you look at his game logs from previous seasons, we got him in 2019 in the Devin Marrero trade with Arizona, but typically not a good starter out of the gates when he, you know, well, he came out mid-season in 2019, but but was one of the better relievers going down the stretch. And then he had COVID at the start of the shortened season last year. So we'll see. I'm not saying buy a jersey, okay? And he took Schilling's number too. So you'd want at least Taylor's name to be on it to avoid the confusion. Yeah. You know what else? Totally random. Nobody's worn number 21 since Clemens. You notice that? And his number's not retired. Nobody's worn number 21. And I only...
Who's going to wear 21?
I don't know. But I'm not a Clemens guy, so I'd love to see somebody wear it. But Buehler wears 21 in L.A., so that's what got me thinking. I'm like, geez, there hasn't been a Red Sox 21.
So. It's out of respect, I think, to some degree. I mean, do you remember the backlash that Martin Perez got when people thought he's actually going to rock 33? They're like, no, yeah, this cannot
you can't
happen.
Do that. You can't do
you
that.
You can't do that,
no,
right?
No.
But it was just someone made a gaffe, allegedly. I mean, we'll never know. I mean, maybe he did want 33, and everyone's like, no. Bad press is like, oh, okay. No, just kidding. That's not what I actually wanted.
Dave Bush took Papelbon's number, I noticed. Pitching coach. He wears number 58, so...
That's fine.
Anyway, just a little bit of freestyling there. Some honorable mentions to get to. JD Martinez, 4-for-7 over the two games. Drove in a couple of runs in game one. Devers, his normal 3-for-7 self. Just continues to be a force. And that's about it for the lineup. Martin Perez, 5 innings pitched, gave up 5 hits, 2 earned runs, walked nobody, struck out 4. Nathan Eovaldi, that's his 2nd or 3rd good start in a row. 5 1/3, only gave up 4 hits, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. He was like lighting them up. He got 6 of those strikeouts fast, and then he was getting more outs on contact, but... and then literally the entire bullpen, I have 2 columns, and this is the first time all season I don't have anybody in the bad column. Like, we did not have 1 bad pitching outing from anyone. So just some of the best pitching we've had this year. Would have been nice to see Erod get his start in today against Miami, but he's going to face Correa and company tomorrow. In the Memorial Day game. But any thoughts on the honorable mentions?
I just wanted to mention Ottavino because of the situation. The command is an issue. And Terry, you mentioned it's because of the weather in part. He had a walk in the 2nd game too. But I like Ottavino going in there and just getting it done. And with the fans behind him, that was a cool moment in the 2nd game. I think it was the 7th inning. I don't think it was in the 8th inning, which he's usually coming on, but...
Right, it was. You're right.
Yeah, I just liked seeing him get things done. He's had a ton of bad outings where he wears it on his sleeve, right? He really wears his emotions on his sleeve. But I think he got some of the fans back this weekend. A little bit more trust, and he can go in there and he can get hitters out with that slider. And I would have liked to see a little bit of more just longevity from Perez. The pitching matchup between Eovaldi and Trevor Rogers was legit. Rogers is my NL MVP, and it's actually I think it's between him and Jazz Chisholm, who didn't play this series, which stinks because Jazz is electric. But that pitching matchup for Eovaldi to go out there and look as good as he did, I was really impressed by that. And it's day in and day out for him now, but that was a serious pitching matchup, and I think Eovaldi won it.
Yeah, so... Ottavino, I mean, the fire that he had when he came off the mound, when he struck out Cooper on a slider, and it was, I just remember watching it like, oh my God, that just happened. And he had fire. Adam Ottavino with that fire reminded me of Joe Kelly. I don't know why, but the first person I thought of was, oh my God, Joe Kelly Fight Club. Like, there's going to be an Adam Ottavino Fight Club. I'm going to buy that shirt. I'll buy that shirt before a Josh Taylor jersey. Yes, he's wearing 38. I don't care. But I will totally buy an Adam Ottavino Fight Club shirt. If someone goes to challenge Adam Ottavino, you're going to be going back in a wheelchair. I just feel like that's the type of fire this guy has. If he's starting to really sling it, we could see... Do you remember that level of that Eric cockiness when he was like, yeah, I could strike out Babe Ruth every single time? I was like, what a dummy. Like, what a jerk. And now he's on our team. I still am like, you're not going to strike out Babe Ruth every single time. But I'll take the fire every day that ends in Y twice on Sunday.
I'm expecting a little bit of a regression because his stuff is so hard to command. Like, to expect that at that level for another 4 months and hopefully five, I'm skeptical. I like to see it, and I know it. Sure. It's got to frustrate Yankees fans right now. They have more problems in their rotation than their bullpen, but but we'll take it. We'll take it. I mean, arguably, you can say Taylor a little bit unsettled. We still don't know what we have in Sawamura yet, but he's trending the right way. He got fired up when he got the final out of that inning. And I wish whatever he said, I wish we know whatever he said in Japanese, because you could put that on a shirt and it would be the most marketable saying in Boston. Like, it would be the best-selling shirt if you could get it. But I love it. Every one of these guys, Darwinson comes off the mound, he's fired up. Everybody out of that bullpen gets fired up, and that's what I love to see.
Yeah, man.
So let's switch to the duds side of the spectrum. I'm looking forward to this one. Charlie, who's your dud?
Oh, goodness gracious. So I want everyone to be sitting down. It's like a best man speech, someone to learn I'll be giving later this year. Bobby Dalbec is my dud. And before anyone starts to throw middle fingers up and cuss me out, because, I mean, it's not the worst thing I've ever heard or seen. 2-for-4, pair of singles, an RBI, and a couple of strikeouts. The sixth inning at bat, I went off. I literally went off. And it took less than a breath for one of my colleagues, one of my peers, to go off at my going off. Because I just don't get how you can defend someone that didn't swing at balls out of the zone and like 20 inches in front of the plate, but flailing. It didn't even look like he cared that he was swinging. It was awful. So, with that being said, in the month of April, he went 15-for-70 with a .214 batting average and struck out 25 times, 35.5% strikeout rate. The following month, he's had one less hit and one less at bat. Yes, he's had four more. He's had four home runs and 17 RBIs. Same number of doubles. He still had four. Four walks. He's walking less and he's striking out more. How much more, you ask? I'm a metrics person. 20% more. That terrifies me. That's too many. We're talking about the fact that Alex Verdugo doesn't strike out as much. 54 strikeouts in 2 months for Bobby Dalbec is almost the same number of strikeouts that Alex Verdugo has all of last year and this year combined. That hurts. When you strike out that many times, you hurt your team. Four of the last five times, you struck out two or more times. 8 games in May, you struck out twice or more. And then before this two-hit performance, you were 0-for-11. And you had 8 strikeouts. So giving you the 2-for-15, you still have 10 strikeouts out of your last 15 at-bats. You strike out 67% of the time. You're almost a guaranteed out. So I cannot and will not get behind him. I'm still salty that they sent down my boy Michael Chavis, because I don't think he's still got a fair chance. And those that are supporting Bobby Dalbec, you guys are really cute. But I'm sorry. This is not going to be the answer. And no, Albert Pujols wasn't the answer. Jason and I agree on that later on. But this is not the answer. This is just a whole boatload of no. Emma, your turn.
I almost want to give that a moment of silence because that was so well said. That just needs to sit for a second. He's completely lost. Bobby Dalbec is completely lost. It's Frenchy Cordero levels, and I never expect anyone to get to that level. I'm saying it. I'm saying it. Bobby Dalbec is a liability. And I firmly believe that if you don't have a halfway decent bottom third of the lineup, your team cannot hang. The bottom third of this lineup, when Dalbec and Cordero were the options, was bottom five in the league. It can't happen. Chavis has looked so good. And I actually was thinking about this the other day. Chavis and Dalbec had eerily similar starts to the show. They crushed the breaking ball, high fastballs, couldn't get on top of it. They hit like 7 or 8 home runs, and then nothing happened. And I was down on Chavis. But seeing what he did this offseason, seeing what he did in the few games that he was here, the hustle, the energy, everything about his attitude, Bobby doesn't have that. And I haven't heard Bobby speak that much, but I think he needs some time down in Worcester to rediscover himself. And in the meantime, it can't possibly get worse if Chavis gets up.
We about this on the last show, and Andrew and Job kind of disagreed with me, but I'd send him down. I really would, because I don't think he has a future with this organization. Costas is going to be up. I still think he's going to be up this season. Some of our co-hosts don't agree with that, but he'll be up next season. And you got Devers on the other corner, or maybe he's going to be at DH, who knows. But there's just no future for Bobby Dalbec in Boston, and he can only hit lefties. And I know Trevor Rogers is one of the best lefties in MLB right now, so it's hard to really ding him for not getting a hit against him. But there was one ball that was in the dirt, like 5 feet in front of him, and he still swung. So it was pretty painful. He had a nice stretch there in the Baltimore-Oakland-Toronto series. He went something like 9 for 36, 3 dingers. I started to drink the punch a little bit, and I resist the punch. It takes me a long time to order punch. and I was starting to have a sip, but he offered in 5 of the last 6 games. He's an automatic out. And I would just rather see Chavis up here. And for everybody who hates Chavis, fine. Put Danny Santana at first base and let's let it ride, because Bobby Dalbec is not the answer. Hunter Renfro is still going to struggle against righties at some point. So you got those two at the bottom. I don't know. We'll get into a couple other players here shortly. But yeah, so I think what he has shown us, and I'm reiterating this from last episode, he's shown teams enough as far as the power goes. He's hit some long balls. If he can go down to Worcester and start tearing the cover off the ball and we leave him there until July, you probably get something nice in return if he's part of a package in July. And I think by doing that, you're going to get the most value that you'll get out of Bobby Dalbec. If you wait until July of 2022, I think his value is a lot lower. So that's the path I would take with Dalbec. And if he ends up being a stud for another team in a year or two, I can live with it. We're living with the Benintendi thing right now. We're living with it. Okay. Yeah, he's back to his old form. But we've got a nice pitching prospect in AA right now, Winchowski, or however he pronounces it. And we've got some more prospects still to be named later, which must be coming up pretty soon, actually. But I can live with Bobby Dalbec mashing for another team, because you know what? We're going to watch Casas do the same thing anyway. So so go ahead, Emma. Who's your dud for the series?
One last thought on that. You know who needs a first baseman who strikes out a lot but sometimes hits home runs? The New York Yankees.
You want to get
and
up?
I would be fine if Bobby D went there. So my dud is Kike Hernandez. And I love Kike. I think he is the perfect guy to be on the Red Sox energy-wise. His personality fits right in. I was super excited about him. Thought he was going to be playing second base, as I'm sure many of us did. And he's getting the majority of his starts in center field. Very versatile on defense. No qualms there. I'm done with Kike in the leadoff spot. And that's where my biggest, where I have the biggest problem. So in this specific series, game one, 0 for 2. He did have a walk. He struck out. Game two, 0 for 4. His season totals, his batting average is .245. He spent some time in the IL. Looked pretty hot in Worcester. Was expecting big things for him. Thought it would turn around. His line right now is .245, .299, .411. I don't know if you can reasonably explain a leadoff hitter with an on-base percentage below 300. It doesn't come straight to my head who the option is. Like, they tried Santana. Verdugo has made it very clear he doesn't like leading off. But it's become desperate enough, in my opinion, that you put Verdugo there and then you move everybody down. You put Kike in the six or seven spot and you see how it works. It's not like we mentioned at the beginning. It's not like Verdugo has crazy good numbers right now. So try him in the leadoff spot and see how he does. Kike does not have a good command of the strike zone right now. You can't have a guy flailing at pitches the way Kike does. I want to see him in a different spot of the lineup and see if somebody else can get on base at a higher clip than Kike does.
I can absolutely get behind that, Emma. And, you know, you hit on something. You know, while he doesn't excel in the one hole, he definitely has earned the right to be in the lineup. And if he's not in the one hole, he's not going to be scoring runs. He's 4 for his last 24. That's not good. That's a .143 batting average. He has no home runs, no RBIs, no extra base hits since the Toronto series. And that's when he had a home run. That was his only extra base hit. He's only had 3 or 4 this whole month. It's just not enough. It's not sustainable. And I mean, I think the one big thing that is keeping Kike relevant is the fact that he can play multiple positions. .245 is not a good batting average for a leadoff guy. And Verdugo's expressed that he'll do it. Not going to like it. I don't think Mookie Betts wanted to bat in the one hole, but he still did it. And if he doesn't like it, then what could it hurt to put Xander Bogaerts in the one hole, make him the new Mookie Betts, get him to get on base? Lord knows he can do it when no one's on. He doesn't like to hit when people are on base. Put him in the one hole and then let's figure out how to get him in. Because if Verdugo can get those clutch hits every once in a while, knock him in that way, I'm cool with it. I don't like Xander Bogaerts with men in scoring position. I don't like Xander Bogaerts with anyone on base. It doesn't feel right. It feels dirty. He can't do it. He likes it when it's like no one's on base. So I can hit it wherever and I can get wherever. That's how I feel about him. But the absolute fair call. 0 for 6 in the series. Hasn't done anything for really 2 series now. So yeah, I'm down for that.
Emma just basically corroborated everything I've been saying about Hernandez all season. And I think I've been the toughest on him of anyone. His career stats, I mean, he's hitting worse than what his career stats were. And even if he was right on par with those, that's not a leadoff guy. It's not. And the painful thing about it is, and I've mentioned this a few times, he's always behind in the count. It's 0-1, 0-2. He's got to grind his way back. Most of the time he doesn't. And it's the same vicious cycle. And you guys are right. There is no perfect solution right now. Maybe that's what we have to have in mind as we get to the trade deadline. Identify a decent leadoff guy. If Duran catches fire, he's got the makeup of a leadoff guy. Typically those guys go into the 8 or 9 hole. So I don't know how realistic that's going to be for this year, but with an eye towards the future, I think that's how it's going to be. It's going to be Duran and Verdugo in those spots. But if we can acquire somebody, Kike Hernandez fits perfectly in that bottom third of the order. He's not going to be an automatic out. He's going to get on base and he's going to do enough. And he's probably not going to have a lot of pressure on him either. I don't know if that will be a benefit as well, but not a leadoff guy, 0-for-6, like Emma said. And I love the signing. I love the versatility as much as everybody else. You know, he's more like Brock Holt. He's not Jacoby Ellsbury, you know, so that's just never going to be a reality. But my dud for the series, and it's not that he was particularly terrible. He was 0-for-1, drew a walk, but I'm going with Marwin Gonzalez. This is a guy who's probably going to be playing for another team if he doesn't find some offense here, because he's been disappointing. He should be a guy in the bottom third of the order that should be steady. And I get that he sees 5, 6, 7 pitches per at bat and he grinds away. That's good, but he's been hovering right around the Mendoza line. He doesn't walk a lot either. You have Arroyo, who has had issues staying on the field his entire career, missed a number of games this year. Santana looks okay, but we don't know who he is. Bloom's going to have to make a difficult decision, and if that decision happened tomorrow, I think Marwin Gonzalez is DFA'd, and so he's got to pick it up. And I like him a lot. He's had some big moments in the month of October with the Astros, and I know, but still, you know, you want a guy who can handle the moment in those situations. And I don't think anybody saw Steve Pierce having the run he had. And Marwin's basically the same makeup of a Steve Pierce type guy. So they're good guys to have around, but not if he's performing like this. So, Charlie, thoughts on Marwin?
I mean, Franchi got as long as he did. So yeah, you're right. Bobby's getting as long as he did. So
that's true.
I mean, Marwin Gonzalez is younger than, at the very least, two of the three of us. I'm not going to ask you how old you are, Emma. Don't worry about it. Marwin's playing like he's older than Albert Pujols. it's kind of sad because Albert Pujols, we don't really know how old he is. He might be 50, but he might be 41. Who knows? Who cares? Marwin Gonzalez was also brought to this team because of his like Swiss Army knife ability. Guess what? Unless someone's banging on a trash can, you're not hitting anything. You're hitting 199 with one home run. You're 1 for your last 17. What are you doing? If we're going to be giving him the same amount of rope that we've given half of the lineup, then, hey, guys, listen, June's going to be real exciting for all the wrong reasons, because Marwin Gonzalez is going to be hitting 136 with one home run on the season. And maybe if we're lucky, he might get his 10th RBI in the year. But I mean, this is a bad signing. This is another bad signing by Bloom. I mean, he's not had just one or two. There have been a few. And this one, unfortunately, just didn't hit. So, I mean, you feel bad. And yes, he's had great moments in the past, but it almost kind of felt like we were signing him based on past performance. And that's why we gave Steve Pierce like a thank you contract. That was a waste of money. This was a waste of Gonzalez got what, 3 million? I think it was 3
Something
million
like
this
that.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a $3 million donation. Like I can't get behind it. I mean, that's a 0-for-1 with a run and a walk. It's going to be the highlight of his month. Like he probably did more damage in that game than he's going to do all next month. And you're right. I don't think he's going to be in Boston. I don't think he's going to be on another team. I think he's going to be DFA'd and he's just going to sit there. And that'll be it. Like his career will end on a DFA.
He actually only has 3 extra base hits on the whole season as well. I mean, we've seen Devers do that in one game. So, yeah, he's definitely got to get it together. As far as dishonorables, I mean, it's hard to it was a bad weather series. There were only two games. The only real notable one that I think is worth touching on is Bogaerts was 0-7 and then only 1-6 in the Atlanta series, which was also two games. So 1-13. It's hard to, you know, trash Bogey, but hopefully this is a short slump and not a long one.
Yeah, he honestly goes through slips and slides, and Martinez does the same thing. I don't put much stock in that. Just to put a bow on the Marwin discussion, I think at the time his positional flexibility made him valuable. And I think that was why he had a market. As time went on, the Red Sox had more options. Kike became the positional versatility guy. Christian Arroyo can play a couple different positions. Danny Santana now can play a couple different positions. The thing is that for Gonzalez specifically, his career has been on in a decline since 2017. When, uncoincidentally, the Astros were stealing signs. In Kike Hernandez's case, he wasn't an everyday player in LA. So I don't think it's fair for Red Sox fans to expect him to come in and be in the everyday leadoff spot and produce. He didn't do that in LA. Marwin Gonzalez didn't do that in Minnesota two seasons ago. So I think we've had our expectations tempered a little bit because these guys aren't performing. But we shouldn't have really ever thought that they were going to. And I don't know. I still think Gonzalez can have flashes. I think he can have good series way early on in the series. This lasted for probably a day. I thought maybe he could be a candidate for that leadoff spot. I've quickly regretted ever thinking that, obviously. But I think he can have flashes where maybe he's the eight hitter and he can strike out less than Dalbec or Cordero. But that's pretty much the ceiling right now.
And I misspoke. Charlie corrected me. He has 10 extra base hits, not three, but I will say only two since May 8th. So it's been a bad recent run anyway. And fair enough with Bogey. He's going to come around. And, I mean, he's a top three or four MVP guy right now. Anyway, some people might even put him higher than that, especially with Trout going to be on the shelf for at least one more month. So we'll see. June's a tough month as far as matchups go. So I've been saying for several shows now, once we get through the month of June, we know who we are because we'll have faced a lot of tough teams. And the Yankees finally for a couple series by then as well. So let's get into the, I thought we were going to bash the Yankees, but we're around the 50-minute mark, so we'll just wrap with the Astros preview. Eduardo Rodriguez goes game one. Charlie, do you have the matchups up or no?
I got them up. I can tell them.
Yeah, go. Just start with the first one.
Yeah, so it's Erod versus Jose Urquidy.
Urquidy, okay. Gotcha. So what we're looking for here, obviously, and it's going to be a tough team to do that with, we need Rodriguez to go 5 or 6 solid innings, hopefully not get slapped around for close to double digits hits. We want to see him be a lot more efficient than, you know, games past. Charlie, you're not on mute, but that's okay. We made it to the 15-minute mark. So, yeah, that's what I'm expecting from Erod. But I can't really pick the Red Sox in game one in this. I got to go with face value here. He's looked terrible. The velocity's coming up, so hopefully that translates into something. But Astros are going to take game one. Emma, what are your thoughts?
The Astros score almost 7 runs a game against lefties.
Oh.
Today they put up 7. On Sunday they put up 7 against Blake Snell in 3 innings. Even if Erod was in a really good stretch, I would give this game one to the Astros. I think Erod might get shelled. Their righties are so lethal. They have one of the best top 5, top 6 in the majors, in my opinion. Bregman, Correa, Altuve, they're all so good. Kyle Tucker's playing much better. And if Yordan Alvarez is back, he's been hurt for the past couple of days, not an IL stint. But I think against lefties, they are just too good. Nobody can throw past them right now.
I agree. And I apologize. I thought I was muted earlier. I don't think Erod's going to do well again. I'm actually very nervous because I hope we're not seeing what could be a shutdown of Erod based on the fact that I still don't think he's 100%. I said at the beginning of the year, I didn't think he was 100%. I don't think many players that had to deal with myocarditis or any even remotely close medical issue would be doing as much as he's doing right now. And we are expecting the world of someone that could have had a career-ending health injury. I don't see it, unfortunately. And, you know, I wish I could say more confidently that, you know, we'll have a chance, but it's at Houston and I don't trust them. And I do trust their starter. I don't trust ours. So a loss in game one.
Game two, we have Garrett Richards against Luis Garcia, who has kind of taken a lot of people by surprise, kind of emerged once Valdez went on the disabled list with his elbow issues. He's a righty, so I'm comfortable. I'm not a – Emma doesn't know this, but Charlie and I – Not big fans of the Richard signing when it happened. We kind of had our little group chat meltdown. But been absolutely phenomenal, and his walks are up a little bit, but has been steady and has been going 6-7 innings in recent games. And I think the Red Sox win game two.
I agree. I don't know if you guys know this off of the top of your heads. Do you know what teams Richards' last starts came against? If you don't know off the top of your head, it's okay. Yeah. I don't think it's been great competition.
It's been Atlanta, Toronto.
Well, Toronto's pretty tough. I mean, that
one. Yeah, actually, those two lineups are some of the best the Red Sox have faced so far. Atlanta's a little low, but.
Right. And Richards got into the seventh inning against Toronto.
Yeah.
This time, because the time that I saw Garrett Richards, he pitched like an 8-year-old and he walked six guys in 4 2/3 innings. And that was terrible.
He was at that game. Yeah.
I went to that game and I wanted to go play in traffic. It was that bad.
That had to lower your thoughts on the signing. He's been very good of late, and the length is what makes me fall in love with a pitcher. Seven innings is amazing, and he's
been doing
the thing. I'm actually excited for June because, as Terry said, we're going to finally see what this Red Sox team is. When the Red Sox and the Yankees play each other, we will finally have some merit to what we talk about. Red Sox Astros, the same thing. They've got the Jays. They've got Atlanta, you know, Tampa Bay is going to be another good series. I'm excited. And going back to the specific matchup, Richards versus Garcia, the Astros needed somebody to step up, and Garcia has been that guy.
I agree.
I think the key this entire series is if the Red Sox offense can match the Astros, which is a big ask. The other thing, Garcia does not have a lot of length. One of the biggest weaknesses that the Astros have is their bullpen. If the Red Sox offense can be okay with the starters, they're not going to get Granky, which I think is a plus. McCullers is hurt, which I think is a plus. Framber Valdez and Jake Odorizzi are just coming off IL stints. They're still kind of wild cards. If they do well and the Red Sox can get past them with minimal damage, I think they can beat up on the Astros bullpen. And I give them a win in game two.
So I'll say this much. Luis Garcia, side note, just got picked up by my dad in fantasy. Number two, which is funny because he's not starting yet. But number two, Luis Garcia kind of reminds me of Nate Eovaldi. Luis Garcia strikes out a lot of guys, but by the end of the fifth inning, he's thrown 100 pitches. If he can work on that a little bit more, I can totally see this cat throwing 6+ innings, 100, 105 pitches. Maybe he only strikes out 6 instead of 7 or 8 or 9 guys. I'm okay with that as a starter because I think if Luis Garcia goes 6+ innings, we lose this game. If he goes under 6, I think the Red Sox win this game.
I don't know if he's even gone over 6 the entire season. I don't think he has.
Luis Garcia?
Yeah.
Luis Garcia went 6 innings in his last game. He only gave up 2 hits. It was dumb. It was against the Dodgers too, which is
really good.
It's the Dodgers. So, it was the longest he'd ever gone. He's had 3 decent starts in a row. It's just the pitch count. The pitch count is really high. Nate Eovaldi threw 101 pitches in his last game. He went just over, 5 innings? And that was it. Yeah. He struck out 7 guys. He struck out 5 in the first 2 innings. He was already at almost 40 pitches in 2 innings. You can't live on that. Zach Wheeler, who pitches for the Phillies, also had 71 of 101 pitches go for strikes in his last appearance. He pitched 7 innings and struck out 14 guys. 14! And he threw the same number of pitches. Twice the strikeouts, went 2 extra innings. They're just not efficient. They need to work on efficiency. And you mentioned it. You can't go 5 innings and survive in the majors. You need to be going 6+. And if you can go 7, oh my God, it's a diamond in the rough. And Luis Garcia went 6 strong against the Dodgers. Terry?
Well, it could be a low-scoring game, you know, but Richards has been pretty steady the last several times out. And Emma makes a good point. The competition outside of his last couple of starts hasn't been great. And I've said recently, I want to see him on the mound at Yankee Stadium in a high-pressure situation against a hot lineup and see how he handles that. Because I think we can start having an eye towards October at this point. I know it's early and we're in for a tough month, but if we come out of it looking pretty good, this is an October baseball team. And I think we're going to have to play a wild card game because I picked the Rays to win the division and they're playing extremely well. So, but I want to see Richards in some high profile matchups, and this is going to be at Minute Maid. So that's a good test. And that crowd is going to be electric, you know, for the Astros. And a lot of guys are having pretty good years. And we'll move on to the next series, next game in the series. Now, I actually didn't realize Valdez had come back. So he's made one start. I thought he was going to be out for a while, and then I wasn't even sure he was going to, you know, still end up being healthy. But he is coming off of a pretty good outing. But so that's the Nick Pivetta start, right?
Pivetta's going to go against Valdez, and Pivetta's gone 5+ in the last 7 starts. He also hasn't lost a game all year. We have no reason to believe that he has a chance at losing it, except for the fact that he's facing Valdez. Now, the difference is Valdez is a better pitcher. I think on paper, I think Valdez scares me more. The difference is, what's his pitch count going to be? What is he going to be limited to? Because if Nick Pivetta ends up going 100 pitches, I call that a standard start in May. He's thrown 100+ in three games this year, 3 or 4, and 3 of them have been in May. He threw over 100 against the Braves, and it's not like he was laboring. He still struck out 9, which I'm pretty sure is a season high. I don't know what Framber is going to be allowed to do. I think his limit was 75. I'm guessing it was 75 this time. He might have 80, 85. If they can get to him early, Pivetta's going 7-0.
So I'll start with Pivetta, and then I'll start with Valdez, and then I'll go to Pivetta. This could turn dangerous, too, because the way the Astros did it in Valdez's first start, which was also a weird thing. Terry, I thought it seemed like everything was leaning towards Valdez potentially being out for the year.
Right.
And then he was out for under 2 months, so it was just kind of strange. They did a Valdez and then Christian Javier split. And Christian Javier was a starter in Valdez's absence. Those two guys together can be dangerous. If they're taking up 7 or the 8 innings, that's tough. That's basically 2 top echelon starters that the Red Sox offense is going to come up against. I don't know if you guys have talked about this before. I am hoping that the second shoe never drops for Nick Pivetta. I cannot believe it hasn't happened yet, but that trade was an absolute steal. It was actually magic. I have no idea how it happened. I am so happy the Red Sox have Pivetta. And this is another test. Every single matchup is a test in this series, and it's the same thing against the Yankees. How is Nick Pivetta going to do against these Astros hitters? I'm hoping it's well. I think he has shown that he can hang, that he can really pitch in these high leverage types of games. But this is when we're really going to know. And unfortunately, I think if he gets shelled, it's going to potentially start a decline that would be very disappointing based on how well he started.
We have talked about the trade and how it's been one of the best trades in recent memory. And we got Workman back. So not only did we get the haul we got one of our guys back.
Yeah. So, and Henry was terrible. So you just got rid of Henry for the sake of getting rid of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Although he has been pretty good with the Reds. Jason Kelly has been pointing that out for a couple of shows. But I wasn't a believer in Pivetta. I just was hoping he could hold up the back end of the rotation. But he's been an ace. He's been on this unbelievable undefeated run. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, he should get the absolute crap kicked out of him by this lineup. He has no business shutting these guys down. But he might do it. He might do it. And I'm here for it. And I'm rooting for it. So we'll see. I think against the Braves, he gave up, what, 4 runs? He didn't look too good. Or was that the outing before? Clearly, I have nothing up. I normally have them written down. But I'm just excited to watch Nick Pivetta. I just want to see it. He's my favorite guy to watch just because you don't really know what you're going to get, but usually you're pleasantly surprised. And his strikeouts have been up in recent games. I mean, he's striking out 8-9 batters the last few outings. So we'll see. You know what? To hell with it. I'm picking Pivetta. I mean, I'm going with face value here. You know, Altuve's had a good year. Correa has had a good year. I think Alvarez is still hurt. But that's a lineup that's still very dangerous in Houston. I don't know if they're going to win the West because Oakland is pretty solid as well. So they did drop 2 games, though, out of 3 to the Padres coming into the series. The Astros did. So maybe we'll catch them. But then again, Erod's pitching tomorrow anyway. But put me down for a win in Game 3. Good with that? All right. So Game 4 must be Martin Perez against, Jake Odorizzi, who I'm also surprised is back because he had a forearm strain, which is usually a precursor to Tommy John. And a lot of people thought Valdez was going to have it. Like, that was like the initial reports. Right. So it's crazy to me that these two guys are coming back. And Odorizzi pitched 5 1/3. His last time out, only gave up 1 run and I think like 3 or 4 hits. So, and that's the guy I wanted instead of Richards. I would have settled for Taijuan Walker as well, but yeah. So I'll get to stick it to Andrew if he goes on a good run. But yeah. Anyway, so Emma, so what are your thoughts on that matchup?
Charlie, I'll let you go first. I'll let you go first. You're just jumping.
No, ladies first. Right, I insist. I feel like we've cut you off. No, you go first.
No, I'm going to steal your thought from before. I really think it comes down to what type of leash both Valdez and Odorizzi are going to be on, because I really think that this bullpen is a weakness, and I think the Red Sox hitters can tear apart this off the bullpen. Excuse me. Odorizzi looked really good. Valdez looked pretty good. Javier is good if he's going to be their 2 guy. Perez is also a lefty. I never really have a lot of confidence in Perez in terms of being lights out or dominant or any sort of words that describe some of the other guys. I'm going to forever laugh at what you said about Pivetta, Terry. That is so good that he has no business pitching this well, but somehow he just continues to go out there and do it. That's perfect.
Accurate.
But I think the Red Sox can take three or four. I think if their offense comes out, even in Perez's game, if Odorizzi doesn't have a good night, the Red Sox can capitalize on that.
Emma, you and I sound a lot like Andrew, and it's starting to scare me. But I think they can win three out of four, too. I want to say it again, because I've said it multiple times before. I wanted absolutely no part, unequivocally no part, of Jake Odorizzi.
He didn't.
I wanted no part of this man.
He wanted, hey, who did you want, though? Tell Emma who you wanted.
I wanted Christian Yelich, and it didn't happen. No. I wanted Corey Kluber since day one. And then when he threw the no-hitter, I asked Andrew, freestyle for a minute, I said, who had the better start? And the response wasn't Corey Kluber. It was Gehrig is still through six innings. Like, no, you didn't answer the question, whatever it was. He threw a no-hitter. And there's been like 26 no-hitters this year. It's stupid. Well, it's four or five. But still, it's just, it's priceless that the guy that I wanted threw a no-hitter for the team that I can't stand. A little frustrating. I understand that he wanted to go to New York because he had a buddy there and whatever. I get it. I still wanted no part of Jake Odorizzi. I think the man was going to get overpaid and he's garbage. And so far this year, Jake Odorizzi has not disappointed. Only one game has he allowed no hits and no runs. He threw five pitches and a third of an inning. Garbage. This man is not going to do well. If Martin Perez can have that leash extended to like 85, maybe 90 pitches, I can see him going six plus innings because he goes five innings and throws 70 pitches. He goes six innings, throws 79. Why is he not going a little bit further? What are we doing? Give him the chance to make believers out of us in him. Because Perez Day is just like we're praying for five and no more than like three runs allowed. I'm okay with Martin Perez giving six plus three runs allowed. I'm a little bit better with that than five and three. So let's see what can happen. That being said, three out of four for Boston in Houston, doable.
Yeah, I don't. Perez has had starts where he's really had to grind this year, and he's done a good job keeping us in games. I don't know that that'll happen in Houston, but I'll join the party and say three out of four anyway. I mean, maybe our hitting just goes off and it won't matter. And our bullpen's in a good spot right now, so we could get some holds in those late innings, especially. You know, with guys like Taylor, Ottavino, although they do hit lefties pretty well, apparently. But so we will wrap on that. We kind of went over tonight. That's probably the most time we've spent on a series preview, but it is a marquee matchup, one that could possibly be an October preview. So be a fun series to watch. I think it's a 4:10 start tomorrow. With Rodriguez. So for the listening audience, we'll be back in 24 hours for Hot Take Tuesday and then the regular show on Thursday night with Andrew and Job. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.